Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, it looks like we're back. We're back on iTunes, finally. After what appeared to be a week or so of problems on iTunes, we should be back. The feed should be correcting itself, updating itself. However, and this is important, you may need, if you listen to this show on iTunes, you may need to actually unsubscribe and resubscribe so that the feed is refreshed. I'm not entirely sure why, but I have been told that that sometimes is the case. So if you do that, it should, fingers crossed here, it should update your iTunes feed. So starting to feel like I'm a victim of a vast left-wing conspiracy over here with iTunes and Apple and all this stuff going on. And, you know, maybe they found out that I'm engaged in the war on women or what have you. But iTunes should be back with the podcast feed through our new host, which is SoundCloud. So again, you can listen to this show, this program on SoundCloud. You can listen to it on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Learn Out Loud, Player FM, all sorts of places. And there's more new changes also coming to this show, and I'll have more of that I can share with you as we move on over the course of the next couple of weeks. But we're moving to an online streaming conservative source is going to begin, it appears. We're in, I guess, the final stages of getting this set up, but it appears that they're going to be carrying our program. Looking forward to that. Once we get that all set up, I'll be sure to share details with you about that. You can check us out on that streaming online conservative talk network as well. And then, of course, we're looking at potential other syndication opportunities with some terrestrial radio stations. So lots of things going on here. And I wanted to tell you that, first of all, it's incredibly exciting. And I wanted to thank you. I mean, this sort of thing is simply not possible without you. I'm very, very, very grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you for listening to the show, for helping it grow in popularity, and to find opportunities like this. I'm incredibly grateful. So thank you so much for listening. You know, I wanted to start off before we get into the news, which, look, there is a ton. There's no way I'm getting through all the stuff I have to talk about this morning. But there is a ton of information that we could discuss. I mean, we've got multiple days of information, stories, and things we could learn and discuss, highlight liberalism versus conservatism, capitalism versus socialism. Yet I repeat myself. But I wanted to start off by recognizing and saying just a brief word about Super Bowl 50, which, of course, was yesterday. And I wanted to congratulate Peyton Manning. You know, Peyton Manning played here for the Colts. I'm outside of Indianapolis, here in the Hoosier heartland. And, you know, Peyton was here for many years, and he turned this program around. You know, when he was a Colt, the success of the Colts season rode in very large part upon the shoulders of Peyton Manning. And while that was not necessarily the case this season for Peyton and the Broncos, of course, yesterday won, as they'd won most of the season, with the help of their stellar defense. I mean, that was an amazing performance by the defense. But for those of you that haven't, you know, followed Peyton, or if you're, you know, the younger audience that only knows Peyton really as a Bronco, or, you know, his last season here injured or what have you, Peyton Manning was a dominant force. He redefined the position of quarterback. And this has the makings of a great story for Peyton Manning. And look, who knows what he'll decide. From the looks of things, he's strongly considering retiring. And what a great story. What a way to go out, especially given all of the criticism he's taken over the years for not being able to win when it matters, choking in the playoffs, all that sort of stuff. Here's his chance to go out on top, and just a great story. Congratulations, Peyton Manning. Now, the game itself was a defensive battle, but it wasn't well played either. The offenses just did not perform well at all yesterday. I also don't think it was very well officiated, to be candid. Cam Newton, I think, looked a little tight in the first half, maybe even flustered. But I think he settled down in the second. He played much better in the second half, but the receivers, my goodness. I mean, they dropped several balls. They never really got anything going yesterday. Anyway, still a good game. I mean, it was, 24-10, I think, was the final score. But it was a closer game, a defensive battle, offenses that were struggling. A lot of that was because of the defense. Some of it was because of the poor offense. But nonetheless, great to see Peyton Manning go out, potentially go out on top as a Super Bowl champion. So an MVP, by the way, was Von Miller, who played amazingly. Von Miller played outstanding. DeMarcus Ware played fantastic. T.J. Ward. I mean, there were several Denver Broncos that had really good games defensively yesterday. So, anyway, congratulations to the Denver Broncos. For those of you that are listening in Denver or Colorado, congratulations for that. Congratulations to the Broncos fans. I really, I found myself pulling for the Broncos yesterday, although I really liked the way the Carolina Panthers played all season. But I found myself caring more about the Peyton Manning story than I thought I would. So, congratulations, Peyton Manning. He redefined the game, or the position anyway, and did a marvelous job in promoting the city of Indianapolis and, of course, Denver. Just a great job, and just wanted to say a word before we got into the bulk of the program here today, which is what we're going to do now. Look, over the weekend there was a Republican debate. And I think there were seven that took the stage at the debate in New Hampshire. Of course, the primaries are tomorrow. New Hampshire primaries tomorrow. Which, by the way, the latest polling, for whatever you want to make of this, this is New Hampshire only. New Hampshire polls show in the Democrat Party, Bernie Sanders, socialist Bernie Sanders, the nutty professor Bernie Sanders, at 53%. Now, this is a Real Clear Politics rolling average, which there's problems with doing it this way, but in general, you'll find Bernie Sanders up roughly 13, 15 points on Hillary Clinton. It's 53-40 is the average of multiple polls in New Hampshire. Now, this is important. In New Hampshire, nationally, Hillary's up 14 points still. But in the state of Vermont, excuse me, New Hampshire, Bernie's from Vermont. In the state of New Hampshire, Bernie Sanders has flipped that to where he's up roughly 13 to 15 points in most polls. For the Republicans in the state of New Hampshire, we have Trump at 31, Rubio at 15, John Kasich at 12, Cruz just a tad below 12%, and Bush coming in right about 10%. But nationally, Trump is still up about 12.5 points in national polling. Still a long way to go. This is a state-by-state contest, a state-by-state battle. So each and every one of these is important. But it appears that Bernie Sanders is going to win New Hampshire. And at the conclusion of the tallying of the electoral, well, not electoral votes, but the delegate count after tomorrow night's primaries, it's quite possible that Bernie Sanders will temporarily be in the lead before we move into South Carolina, which is for the Republicans is Saturday, February 20th. But be that as it may, we had a debate on Saturday night. And there's, look, the main news that I've seen coming out of this debate was the argument, was the position, was the belief that Marco Rubio came across as like a robot during the debate. He came under fierce criticism from Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey for sounding as though all of his responses were staged, for not defending his legislation or trying to make, you know, argue in favor of his policy strongly enough. Of course, Marco Rubio says that part of politics is recognizing that not everything you want to get done can get done. But he was under, really, in the early stages of this debate, under constant assault from Chris Christie. You know, my take on this, of course, I'm different, I guess, in this respect. I didn't really think Rubio did poorly. Governor Chris Christie was attacking him for repeating the same talking points and saying that, you know, your team has taught you to say this, you're just repeating the words, there's no substance here. What you're saying is what's the problem with Washington, D.C. politics. I'm a governor, I'm used to getting things done. What you're saying here is, you know, simply words, and there's no direction behind these words. There's no force of will behind these words. This is what Chris Christie says, of course. But what I find ironic is that someone's told Chris Christie to say this. He did not come up with this on the spot. I mean, the attacks against Marco Rubio by Chris Christie were just as planned and orchestrated by someone, by a team of people, by advisors, by debate planning and practice and so forth, as were Marco Rubio's. And I don't think Rubio came across as robotic as they make him appear. Now, I mean, it was not necessarily a favorable exchange for Rubio. But Rubio took boos from the crowd. And Chris Christie received cheers, which at that point made me write down, I have notes here. I asked the question, who's in the audience? I find out later, according to Donald Trump, that the only, well, candidates received 20 tickets, according to Donald Trump. I saw this on an interview on Fox the following morning. He said that 20 of them, or 20 tickets were given to his campaign, and the rest were given to, as he put it, Republican establishment donors, which, of course, he pointed out that none of them were his donors because he doesn't have donors. He's self-funding his campaign, he tells us. So anyway, but lots of boos. I mean, it wasn't necessarily pretty, and Chris Christie was definitely on the offense. But look, I don't think Rubio's good in these things. Rubio is a very good communicator. He's very articulate. There's a problem with a few of Rubio's issues and so forth. There's concerns. Look, there's concerns with all of these guys. They're human beings, right? They're human beings that are not perfect. Only the left believes that they have perfect candidates because their religion is liberalism. We don't look at it that way. We understand that all these guys are going to have some degree of fault, some much more than others. I mean, how John Kasich's at 12% is beyond my wildest imagination. In fact, he said, leading up to the debate, that maybe he was running for the wrong party. He made some comment about maybe he was the only one there that could run as a Democrat, which I happen to kind of agree with that, Mr. Kasich, Governor Kasich. But nonetheless, I don't think that Rubio was just obliterated in this. Now, this is, of course, the talking points of the media, of the elite, of those that think that they can tell us what to think from these things. And I didn't walk away with that perception. In fact, once the attacks ended on Rubio, Rubio settled down and I think did a very good job throughout the remainder of the debate. But some of this sort of thing really bothers some people. And it brings back to memory, brings back to mind when Rubio delivered, what was it, the response to the State of the Union a few years ago where he had to grab that cup of water and awkwardly drink it. As he was giving his remarks, I guess he gets cotton mouth or his mouth was dry or something or other. I don't know. But the point is, these things really matter to some people. In fact, I read, we'll talk about this a little bit later if we have time, but 42% of the Democrat Party now has no problem. And in fact, is in favor of socialism. So when that becomes the people that are, you know, looking at these elections and you know, looking at candidates, obviously we can see that these superficial things do matter. And I'm not saying it's not a problem. It's not indicative of someone who can't think on their feet and so forth. I just don't happen to think it was as bad as it's being portrayed to be. But anyway, I'm going to stop and take the first break of the day. When we get back, more on the debate, and there is, believe me, there is a lot of things to discuss, including Hillary Clinton, including Madeleine Albright, who apparently has a special place for those women who won't support Hillary. And we also have some information on, believe it or not here, we have a wide variety of interests and things that we report on here. Something from Stonehenge that actually applies to the political process. So anyway, sit tight. More when we get back. Thanks for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Monday. It's February 8th, the morning after the Super Bowl, the day before the New Hampshire primary. So it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for joining us. You know, before the break, we were talking about the Republican debate that happened over this weekend, and just wanted to talk a little bit about that. I mean, it's a lot of the same old stuff. In fact, ABC, I thought, did an absolutely horrific job. Martha Raddatz. Look, Martha Raddatz had an axe to grind here. She was miserable, unhappy, accusatory in her questions. Just not a very good job. In fact, I think I tweeted she should stick with the softball questions she lobs to the Democrat candidates because she was out of her league. I mean, she questioned, in fact, Ted Cruz a couple of times on something. In fact, I think what it was, she tried to get him to give a specific response to North Korea. You may have seen this over the weekend. Shortly before the debate aired, North Korea, it was reported, had tested some, what they believed was some banned missile technology. Of course, since they've gotten the ability, well, since they have nuclear weapons now, the world pays close attention to this. And this, of course, thank you to Bill Clinton's nuclear deal, which, of course, has the looks very similar to or has many of the same naive approaches and ideas that we find in the Iran nuclear deal. Thank you, Jihadi Joe Donnelly, for that as well. But about an hour, I don't know if it was an hour, but shortly before the debate, it was reported that North Korea had launched some sort of a missile test of potentially banned missile technology. Because this, if this is successfully carried out, it is believed that this missile technology could potentially one day deliver a nuclear warhead courtesy of North Korea to the United States. Keep in mind, every time I say something like this, just envision President Bill Clinton, who orchestrated this so-called nuclear deal with North Korea. Just keep in mind the promises we were made that this prevented them from obtaining the nuclear weapon. This would make the world a safer place. So on and so forth. And look at what we get. We get missile tests. We get acts of provocation. We get, I mean, a madman acting at his finest. Kim Jong-un, right? And Kim Jong-il before him. So in the wake of this, Martha Raddatz asks Ted Cruz, what would his specific response be? She wants details. Now this guy, who's not involved with immediate intelligence reports, as the president would be privy to, stepping on to the debate stage, I don't even know if he had heard about this, depending on when the news broke, he was asked to give specific responses. And of course, she framed this. She said, look, you've made specific responses, aggressive specific responses to some of the problems we have in the Middle East. Why don't you do the same for us regarding North Korea? And he said, well, I've been able to see the information, the security, the intelligence reports regarding those issues in the Middle East. And she basically said he hadn't. And he said, well, I stand to correct you here. I actually have seen those intelligence documents. Oops, not Martha Raddatz. She's trying to tell him he hadn't seen the documents. And then, of course, Ted Cruz, I think, did a fantastic job in his response to this. But these moderators are just, some of them are out for blood. And Martha Raddatz, in my estimation, was. And she tried. It wasn't just Cruz she attacked. It was Rubio. It was Carson. In fact, I wrote down the debate started off by asking Mr. Trump, Donald Trump, what he thought about Senator Cruz saying his temperament is not one that we want to be able to become president because of the, I don't know, access to nuclear weapons and the greatest military in the world, that sort of thing. Second question was, Mr. Carson, can you tell us why Ted Cruz is awful for telling everyone that you left the race? And I think Ted Cruz, incidentally, did a very good job in explaining and defending himself, and he apologized again to Ben Carson. Rubio was then attacked about his record, his lack of experience, and that's, of course, when Chris Christie jumped in. That got a little bit ugly. Then they pitted Bush against Rubio. Then this discussion came up, which I want to nip in the bud here. This entire thing about, there seemed to be an argument about whether or not President Obama was completely inept and incapable, or whether this was a deliberate action of a president who seeks to remake America from what it was founded to be. And Rubio was one that was saying, look, this guy knows exactly what he's doing. Now, he wasn't saying that this guy is doing the right thing. He was saying this man promised to remake America, which he did, incidentally, before he took the office. What did he say when he was campaigning? This is the greatest nation in the world. Now, help join me in helping remake it. I'm paraphrasing, but it's very close to that. And Rubio's just saying, look, this is intentional. Christie disagreed with that. Bush disagreed with that, saying that we should not, in fact, make the same mistakes that we made in 2008 by electing a first-term senator, because we've seen we've seen what sort of ineptitude we get whenever we elect a first-term senator without much experience to the position of president. Only problem is, that's not the problem. The problem is this man's ideology. I mean, you can make the case that experience is a necessary requirement. I mean, obviously there's some experience, but I mean specific. Look, the governors are going to say you need to have executive experience running a state. You need to have been a governor. Chris Christie will say this. John Kasich will say this. Jeb Bush will say this. If Scott Walker were in the race, he would say this. If Bobby Jindal were still in the race, he would say this. I mean, that's one of their selling points. And they can make that point, but the problem with Barack Obama is not that he was not a governor. The problem with Barack Obama is that he's a socialist. The problem with Barack Obama is that he does not adhere to the separation of powers or constitutional rule. He is the anti-constitutional president. So that sort of talk went back and forth. Of course, Bush and Christie said that we don't want to make the mistake by electing someone with no executive experience, someone that was just merely a junior senator, a first-term senator, what have you, because that's the lesson of Barack Obama. No, the lesson of Barack Obama is ideology matters. Ironically, the two things that the Democrat Party represents, number one, they represent socialism right now. We should not elect another socialist leader, as Barack Obama is. Although the hardcore left will tell us he's not. He's not far enough left for them. And number two, you should not elect someone based upon some sort of an external appearance, someone's race or gender. And that's what Hillary Clinton's running as. And we'll talk about that when we get back. But actually, it's a perfect segue. So anyway, going to stop and take our second break here. When we get back, we're going to talk exactly about that. Hillary Clinton pandering, begging, frankly, begging women to vote for her. In fact, Madeleine Albright's out there telling them there's a special place for them, for those women that don't support Hillary Clinton. Politics at its finest. So anyway, going to stop and take a break. When we get back, more on that. So see you in just a second. Are you looking for an alternative to employer-provided health insurance? Maybe your rates have skyrocketed, or maybe your employer doesn't provide health insurance. And then you visited healthcare.gov and realized how much of a debacle Obamacare really is. Why don't you take a look at what my family and I do for our healthcare needs? We're members of Samaritan Ministries, and we absolutely love it. If you're looking for a biblical, non-insurance approach to your healthcare needs, visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/healthcare to learn more. And as an added bonus, my listeners will receive an exclusive $50 credit, but only when you complete the application on my website. Go to theantidotetoliberalism.com to apply or to get more information. My family and I love it, and we think you will too. God bless. Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Monday. It is February 8th. It is a pleasure to be here. You know, one other thing, just I guess to wrap up the whole debate, Republican debate over the weekend, I just wanted to go through. I thought, you know, Trump did fine again. I think Cruz did very well, in my opinion. I personally think Rubio did a pretty good job. He did have to endure some very strong attacks from Chris Christie early on. But I think Rubio shines in these environments. I really do. Now, I say these things, this is just my objective opinion of this. I don't even agree with some of these guys. I'm not saying I do or don't with Rubio. I think Rubio did a good job. But my point is, I'm not saying just, you know, my guy did well here or what have you. Let's see, who else up there? Bush. You know, I've heard people say Bush did a better job. I guess he did better. I'm just not sure that. I kind of think the writing's on the wall for him. Unless he can continue to get donations, and that's where the antidote to not doing well at these. If you can be one of the last few standing, he might be able to to gain some momentum. I don't see that happening, but I guess you never know, especially the way that that this political process is playing out this year. You know, John Kasich, they you know, say he did a good job as well. I have a hard time seeing that. I do. Maybe he did better than usual. He comes across a little patronizing to me. He sounds, in many cases, like a Democrat. I mean, he did okay at points. I don't want to say he didn't. Ben Carson, I think Ben Carson has some good ideas. I think he's a great man. I don't think this is his form. He's not given a lot of time, and when he's given the time, he usually points out that he wasn't given time, and I just don't think that's the image that, you know, you want to portray. But I think he did okay. I don't think he did poorly. It's just not his. It's not really his thing, I don't think. Chris Christie, look, I think Chris Christie looked strong to me as far as coming out and attacking Rubio, regardless of what I think about that. I think he definitely got some momentum and some attention coming out of this thing. So anyway, is that all of them? Bush, Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, Trump, Christie, Carson. Yeah, that's all of them. Anyway, I think the debate all in all was good. I will give a solid F to Martha Raddatz. Her performance was atrocious. And ABC News, I mean, every time they go to one of their breaks, basically an intermission, I guess I would say, they would have Jonathan Carl and George Stephanopoulos, who is, of course, was the right-hand man of the Clintons for many years. In fact, one could argue is still in that same position, just working for a network this time. They would tell us what to think about what we just saw. I didn't need them to tell me what to think. I mean, they were trying to reshape that debate multiple times. I think they did a bad job carrying the debate. I really do. Although they had Mary Catherine Hamm on there, I think she did an okay job. I don't think, what is it, Daniel Muir, the other guy on the stage, I think he did okay. But Martha Raddatz was just, I think, flat out awful. But anyway, enough about the debate. We'll see what New Hampshire voters thought about it, along with where these candidates stand tomorrow night. So, anyway, let's move on to the Clintons. Let's move on to the Democrat side of the equation. Oh, I tire of this. Especially, look, we had a debate, again, about ideas, about foreign policy, about responses to North Korea and ISIS and the top issues, immigration was a big issue, tax plans, all these things that are significantly important to the United States of America. Those were discussed during the Republican debate. Then I have to see what it means to be a Democrat. And first of all, and I alluded to this earlier, 42% of Democrats are now completely comfortable with, embrace the idea of socialism. I mean, let that sink in. 42% of Democrats are okay with socialism. Now, more specifically, let's look at the Democrat Party and how this very superficial, you know, the party that only talks about race and gender and sexual orientation, this is all they ever talk about. Everything to the left is identity politics. You are what they can see that you are externally. You know, I think on the Republican stage, there are different ideas on how we should govern. I feel like you've got people like John Kasich and Jeb Bush, and maybe to some extent Chris Christie, who say, President Obama is a bad manager. I can manage it better. My state, I did this. We implemented that. I did this, you know, we cut here, we reallocated funds there, blah, 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 right? I'm a better manager. Then you've got those that are like Ted Cruz, that are like, I think, Marco Rubio, that are like Ben Carson, that come out and say, look, Washington is, and you could even put Donald Trump in here. He's just in a different group than those guys. Those guys, I think, are tied more to an ideology of conservatism. But let's throw Trump in there as well and say these guys say Washington is broken. You know, Ted Cruz will say the Washington cartel. Donald Trump will say politicians are inept. We got idiots in D.C. These sorts of things, right? So they want to shake up the system. They just don't want to manage it better. They want to have the private sector manage more of it. Now, again, Trump goes back and forth between, I mean, he'll say things that sound like Jeb and Kasich where he can manage it better, but he also says that, you know, there's systematic problems there. But regardless, my point is there's ideas, right? There's people that are articulating ideas. Then I get to the side of the Democrats. And what do I hear? I hear that Hillary can't win the female vote. And then I hear she brings Madeleine Albright onto the stage at a rally to try to rally the female support around her, which she's down 8 points amongst females in Vermont, or excuse me, New Hampshire, sorry. Bernie Sanders is from Vermont, so I keep saying Vermont, but this is New Hampshire primaries. The next door state is, of course, Vermont. But Bernie Sanders is up 8 points among female voters in New Hampshire. She brings out the big guns. She brings out Madeleine Albright. And this is what we get to hear from the great Madeleine Albright, Clinton supporter from decades past. This is what she says to the audience about women and supporting Hillary Clinton.
We can tell our story about how we climbed the ladder, and a lot of you younger women don't think you have to. It's been done. It's not done, and you have to help. Hillary Clinton will always be there for you, and just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other. So, Hillary, you are not only going to the White House, but to that other place. So, oh, thank you so much. Wow. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, if that doesn't convince you to vote for Hillary Clinton, I don't know what will. I mean, Madeleine Albright saying that there's a special place in hell for women who don't support each other. I mean, this is so patently absurd and ridiculous. So while the Republicans are talking about ideas and different approaches and substance, I've got Madeleine Albright and Hillary Clinton telling me, essentially, if you're not a woman that's going to vote for Hillary Clinton, you should go to hell. I mean, that's basically what she just said. And I got Hillary over here cackling and clapping and thinking this is fantastic and sophisticated and great. I mean, this is what the left resorts to every single time. 100% of the time, this is what they resort to. Because they don't have ideas. They think they have ideas. And when they do have ideas, they're terrible ideas, namely socialism. Just patently ridiculous and absurd. I saw over the weekend that apparently Stonehenge, they found where a group of women, I think roughly, maybe even more women than men, were buried at the site at Stonehenge. And they said that, look, this indicates that gender equality existed back at the time of Stonehenge. I say, wait a minute, not so fast. I mean, how do they know there wasn't a pay gap in the ancient Stonehenge communities? I mean, was there a glass ceiling? What about women having to pay more for health insurance? Did that happen? I mean, the superficial left, they are obsessed with this. They are truly obsessed with this. And I know I'm paying it as a conservative, white, Christian male who owns a business, who's whose wife homeschools their children of her own choice, by the way, that I am the enemy. I am public enemy number one to the left. That I wake up every morning trying to figure out how I can keep somebody down, usually someone who has a different race or ethnicity or gender from me, or someone that works for me. Of course, I wake up every morning thinking of how I can exploit that relationship in my small business where people access my home. They hold my children. Of course, I don't care one bit about these people. I'm the problem. The superficial left resorts to the same tactics, and they work, unfortunately, with some people because most people don't think about them further than what Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright just did there. It is sick, it is sad, and it shows that there's a lack of ideas, a lack of substance. When you have to bring out the vote for Hillary or you're going to hell card, that shows desperation, that shows lack of any sort of idea or strategy whatsoever. It's an empty campaign. You know, when Jesus was alive, he criticized the Pharisees for being, he called them whitewashed tombs. On the outside, you look spectacular, but on the inside, you're dead. And that is what this style of campaigning is. I mean, to those of us with a brain, it doesn't even look good from the outside. But it's dead. It's hopeless. There's nothing of any substance whatsoever in this argument. Let's look to the merits of the person running, not to their gender, ethnicity. I don't care. I mean, Carly Fiorina's a woman. Do you see her saying these sorts of things? Patently ridiculous and stupid. I gotta stop and take another break. When we get back, believe me, there is plenty more to talk about today. So sit tight. Be back in just a minute. I'm not a full-time podcaster, but I play one on this show. My daytime job is running a small business called Huff Promotional Strategies. We are a graphic design and promotional products company that helps clients with a wide range of projects ranging from logos and websites to promotional products and apparel. We have experience working with well-known brands, small businesses like ours, and everything in between. So if you need help with marketing or promotional products, why not give us a try? Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today for more information, and you'll find a 10% discount code that we will apply to your next order. We work with businesses, churches, schools, civic groups, sports leagues. You get the idea. Visit huffpromotional.com/podcast today to learn more and to get your 10% discount code. That's huffpromotional.com/podcast. Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Monday. It's February 8th. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, I've mentioned this a time or two already today, but I wanted to let this sink in a little bit. I wanted to talk about this for a minute. 42% of Democrats are in favor of socialism. I also wanted Chris Matthews to take a moment to let this sink in because he constantly tells us, as he did when he asked Debbie Wasserman Schultz and then again with Hillary Clinton, when he asked these two Democrats to articulate the difference between socialism and the Democrat Party, neither one would touch it with a 10-foot pole. And neither one of them could articulate any difference whatsoever because socialism is, in fact, has found its home in the Democrat Party in 2016, arguably long before that, but it's the make-believe world where they pretend like they're not socialists is now behind us. We have a generation of young people who believe that socialism is the ticket. I mean, they never learned the lessons of the 20th century. They didn't see the evil empire, the Soviet Union. They have no idea about Venezuela and Cuba. They have no idea about all the dangers. They have no idea that it was the Nazi Socialist Party. Let's not forget that. The left always wants to call the Nazi Party the far right, but in reality, look at the name of the Nazi Socialist Party. That's what they were, the Nazi Socialist Party. But we got 42% of Democrats saying that they're in favor of, that are saying it. How many more are and just don't know it? So think about this. Two out of five Democrats, this is going to upset some of you, but two out of five Democrats, because of this poll, assuming it's right, two out of five Democrats are un-American. I mean, socialism is un-American. It is the antithesis. It is the antithesis of socialism. Well, socialism is the antithesis of free market capitalism and liberty and freedom and so forth, which is what America was built upon. Two out of five Democrats want others to pay their way. Two out of five Democrats ignore the lessons of history. In fact, you could also say that two out of five Democrats have no idea what those lessons of history even are. Two out of five Democrats have absolutely no clue or concern about the relationship between liberty and our system of economics. Liberty is only possible, truly possible, when you're free to do with your money as you choose. Socialism is not a system that permits that to happen. They want to call it democratic socialism, as though by tagging the word democratic on the front and saying that we can tell you what to do so long as at least half of us tell you that you have to do it. They think they've come up with some sort of profound statement here. Two out of five Democrats have no clue what made America great and are just unwilling to learn the lessons of the 20th century. I mean, Chris Matthews can sit over there and scream and tell us that there is a difference between socialism and the modern Democrat Party, but 42% of his party is in favor of, is embracing socialism. I mean, let that sink in. I mean, I'm used to going to, you know, when I went to school, when I was a kid, when you accuse someone of being a socialist, they wanted to defend themselves. They wanted to tell you that they weren't. I mean, few people really embraced this idea, this concept of socialism, because it was so apparent how it led to misery, how it led to equality, sure, equality and suffering, how it led to, I mean, it leads not to prosperity. It leads to rationing because production does not meet demand. It can't. There's no incentive. I mean, you look at, it's amazing to me that we have to have this discussion. It really is. And this is coming from someone that I've paid attention to politics for 20 years, since the time I was a teenager. And I think it's absolutely astonishing that we have to have these elementary discussions. I mean, in my mind, this sort of conversation should never have to take place. I'm willing to have it. I'm willing to try to articulate to people what is so bad about socialism. But I think you should first start by looking at those socialist countries. I mean, people came here. People considered fleeing their countries with nothing but what was on their back to come to the United States. And why? You think they came here? Now, today they might, as they flee across the southern border to take advantage of our free giveaways, welfare, whatever, all the stuff we give them. I don't even have time to list them. But historically, people fled here to get away from a big government, to get away from communism and socialism, to get to a place where they could live their lives as they saw best. And that is not, absolutely 100%, that is not socialism. Socialism is the basis upon which those countries where these people fled from, that is what they were built on there. When they fled these communist regimes. They are socialistic. They are kissing cousins to socialism. If the government can control your money, the government can control your health care, the government can control your life. And that's what we've gotten to where 42%, two out of five plus, frankly, Democrats support socialism. This is absolutely 100% indefensible, unexplainable, absolutely patently ridiculous. We've got a war on our hands here. We have a war for the ideological heart and soul of the United States of America. On the Republican side, it's conservatism versus the establishment, versus those that think they can be better government managers than the left. But you step outside the party, it is constitutional conservatism. It is actually free market capitalism versus hardcore socialism. And they are gathering. They are organizing. They have a lot of momentum. Sure, the conservatives, I think, have a tremendous amount of momentum. But it should not be discounted, the amount of momentum that these socialists have either. Anyway, this is an important role, and we've got to win this battle. And that's what we seek to do here, is to help to participate in winning this battle, because the consequences are enormous. Absolutely enormous. Got to stop and take one more break. When we get back, going to wrap up for the day and share a little bit about something else I saw in the news. So sit tight. You're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Be back in a minute. I'm often asked questions about politics, and I absolutely love having the opportunity to teach about the greatness of conservatism. So I thought it would be a good thing to build a resource library on our website. And we did. Our resource library is a list of recommended books, classes, and other conservative resources that help educate you and your friends about the profound truths of conservatism. On our resource library, you'll be able to sign up for free classes, and you can browse our recommended books and link directly to Amazon.com to purchase. It's simple, it's helpful, and it's beneficial to conservatives of all types. Visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/library to check it out today. That's theantidotetoliberalism.com/library. And thanks for being a loyal listener to our podcast. Well, welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. I am your host, Todd Huff. Today is Monday, February 8th. Just going to wrap up here really quickly. I saw in the news, I wanted to share this with you, an article that tells me military decisions will be based on climate change impact. You know, my dad has a word. My dad is not a conservative. My dad is a Union Democrat, a proud Union Democrat. I have a tremendous amount of love and respect and admiration for my father. We do not agree on certain political issues, although I'll tell you, it's amazing. It's amazing on the big stage. My dad is not one of these hardcore leftist that's, thinks some of this crazy nonsense. But he is a Union Democrat, and we don't agree on a lot of things, politically speaking. But he had a term for people that he used called overeducated idiots. And I think that's what we're dealing with. I mean, there are real threats out there. And what are we concerned with? What are we telling our military to be concerned with? Climate change. Incidentally, not one of those real threats. It's silly. It's unprofessional. Stinking dangerous is what it is. We have enough rules that prevent us from getting victory. And we sure don't need another one, especially something as ridiculous as telling those military leaders in the field to make decisions based upon the impact of climate change. patently ridiculous. I wanted to pass that along before we wrapped up for the day. But anyway, I've got to wrap up for the day. As always, it's a pleasure being here. Thank you for listening. If you have questions, comments, or just want to connect, feel free to email me, Todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can connect with me on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @CommonSenseGear. So anyway, guys, that's going to wrap it up for me today. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.